Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, you can read me on Bleacher Report, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Rick Bucher. All right, as promised, this is a conversation that I had with Lakers guard Rajon Rondo a couple of weeks ago now for a piece that I wrote for Bleacher Report. We got into just about everything, the Lakers and everything that transpired this past season, as well as his series of one-year deals after spending the first 8.5 seasons with the Boston Celtics, and just in general, his view of the game and how he prepares. Some of you said that you could listen to Rajon Rondo talk about basketball all day. I'm with you. I could too. And because of that, I thought that I would share this conversation. Excuse whatever ambient noise there might be. We had this conversation at a Manhattan Beach cafe. I didn't originally plan for it to be a podcast, but the conversation was so good and I couldn't get all of it into the story for Bleacher Report. So with no further ado, here's Rajon.
You ever go down to the beach?
All the time. I walk it. I have a couple of beach bikes, so I ride on the beach all the time and kind of relax. I probably go today.
You ever surf?
Never surf. But I was supposed to take lessons this summer. That's still a possibility. So my chef, she surfs a lot, so she told me she would teach me. But
let me know, bro.
You surf?
I just surfed with my son yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh man.
Everybody here, like I said, every morning they get up and they walk.
As we were driving down, yeah. I'm checking like every spot and seeing who's there and who can surf or not. My whole family does. We've done a couple getaways where it's just me and the kids, and especially with my son. We were out probably a couple weeks ago. We went to one spot. We were there, and it was just the two of us on that spot. And he got two of the longest waves of his life. And you could have seen his smile from like outer space when he was paddling back out.
Yeah.
Man, hey, there's nothing better than that. So Duff tells me, since you had your son, he tells me he feels like you're a changed guy, like that's had an influence. Maybe, I don't know if it's your son or whether he just said, I really want you to do this story because I feel like Rajon's a different guy. And I didn't know what that meant. And he and I haven't talked about it because I wanted to see if I could get with you first before I did it.
Okay.
You feel that? You feel different? You feel like something's changed?
No, I'm just getting older.
Yeah.
I mean, 33, obviously priorities and things that matter most are a different factor in my life now. So, I have an 11-year-old daughter, my son's 7, so just like I said, as you get older, you mature and you look at life different perspectives.
So how do you think parenthood has changed you?
Well, it's not about you anymore. I can be pretty selfish at times and, growing up. Fighting in the household, but competing, brothers, younger sister, middle child, mothers spoiled me to death, so now it's not about me anymore. Anything I do is not about me. It's always for them, with the mindset of thinking for them first and how I perceive in life or my actions, and you know, my legacy is pretty much going to hold to their truth and how people view them, unfortunately, but that's just how life works.
Yeah. How is the legacy basketball wise? How do you feel about where you're at?
I never really thought about it, you know, to be honest. Like I said, I tell people all the time, like I didn't have basketball dreams growing up. I didn't think I would be an NBA player until I was about maybe, or even have any dreams or aspirations to become an NBA player until I was like 16, 17. So,
really?
Yeah, I played just, you know, because it was something to do. So I played because it was something to do. Like I said, the neighborhood kids, my first love was football. I thought I'd be a pro football player.
What? Wide receiver?
Quarterback.
Quarterback.
Yeah. So I kind of narrowed it down, obviously, in high school and went to basketball. But like I said, I never thought I'd be where I am today. So as far as legacy and, you know, the basketball world, like, it doesn't make a difference. Like I said, I just want to go out there and continue to do what I do best and try to lead and become, you know, be a dominant player on the court every time I step out there. So legacy, it'll take care of itself. But I'm not a big believer in what, you know, what people view me or how people view me or what they say. I mean, it's just people that love me is in my inner circle, know who I am, and that's the best thing I can do, you know, as far as just building up my legacy.
There seems to be a real divide. Like people feel strongly about you one way or the other, right? Those who are with you, those who believe in you, those who have experienced you, like, he's my guy. And then there's a whole other side that's like, he's a maniac or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Did you see the piece that ESPN did on the Lakers? Did you hear about it?
Baxter Holmes?
Yes, yes. What'd you think of it?
Interesting. I remember that story. The story he told about Rob?
Yeah.
Or the whole thing?
The whole thing. But the one about... I mean, Rob telling the story about
Kobe
and Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
What did you think when you heard it?
I didn't think too much of it. Obviously, I thought it was the truth.
Yeah.
You know, cause obviously, Rob and Kobe, you know, their relationship years go way, way back. So
there's no reason not to believe it.
Right? Yeah, not to believe it. No reason at all. So, you know, the truth came out, I guess. Eventually, it always does. And it's unbelievable, but it's just, that's part of the game, I think. You know, it's just what it is. It's a surprise, but at the same time, it's not.
Yeah. Was it as chaotic as it sounds like it was?
With the Lakers, the organization?
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, obviously, the biggest market, media market, you know what you're going to come into the season with LeBron James on the team. So, it wasn't this crazy. It was the way things ended, maybe with how Magic exited, you know, as far as the president doing it that way.
Yeah.
You know, things happen, you know, you learn, and... I mean, you just go through it and see. Now, there's, you know, pretty much no surprise going forward or the positions I want to be in when I get, you know, to that position as far as GM or president, you know, yeah. Ain't going to be such much of a shock. But
is that an ambition of yours?
Yes, absolutely. So it wasn't crazy being in it. You know, it's kind of crazy. We got closer towards the end of the season versus the beginning. Like, the team, the chemistry, the camaraderie. Guys started to, you know, really come out of their shell and become comfortable with one another. You know, start to hang out a little bit more on the road. Like, so ideally, I'll take blame and maybe not developing the chemistry as much as early. But, you know, guys' personality is so different. Six guys on one-year deals. You know, you don't know how much people are willing to invest or open up because people don't want to, you know, mess up or get into certain labels. So people kind of tend to stay in the shell. And that's just kind of what happened this year for us as far as the chemistry, as far as developing early. And obviously with injuries as well, that takes a toll in part as well. So,
you are
eye-opening. It was a learning experience. And, you know, something I put in the back of my, you know, back of my arsenal as far as how to handle certain situations when I go forward.
What's the big takeaway for you that you learned that you would say, hey, you know what, next time I'm in this situation, I might do this rather than this because I saw how this played the Lakers?
I'm a big guy in chemistry, but I kind of try to let it develop, you know, organically and not so much force. So, you know, nowadays it's so new. Everybody's so phone dominant. people don't really understand how to have a real conversation and talk out problems or what.
Man, you do sound like a dad.
You to understand. So it's just different. It's, like I said, when I came in, it was completely different how the game has changed, but that's just what it is, and that's just the mindset of the, you know, the new generation now. So you have to adapt or you get left behind. So I would just try to, going forward, I would try to maybe try to get the chemistry developed a little bit earlier, quicker. But like I said, I was injured 60 games, so it's kind of hard. I was still trying to be at practice every day and be vocal and help guys, but it's different from being a coach and a player. It's different from being a hurt player and a player versus a player and a player. Does that make sense as far as being out there every day in a fight with them versus coming, trying to do film, but you're not really playing, so it's like I can easily judge everyone else, and people may not be as receptive, like, oh, you just sound like a coach now. You're not playing. You don't understand, like, but so it depends on the respect factor. A lot of guys have respected me in the last couple of teams I've been on, so that's, you know, very humbling, and that helps as far as me being the vocal guy and trying to get guys to be on one accord. But it starts with me showing how genuine I am and just kind of dedicating and being true to the game and true to understanding, and we all have one mindset and try to win. So,
yeah.
But it's hard, like I said, when you have six guys on a one-year deal, for guys to, you know, invest and give their all versus not knowing, you know, what the future holds.
No doubt. Who taught you the most about leadership?
Taught me the most about leadership?
Yeah.
Say a combination of, it's not really just one guy. I would say maybe Doc obviously had a lot to do with it. Doc, Kevin Garnett, you know, he did it with his play and versus his talking. And then when things didn't go well in years in Boston or things were a problem, Kevin would be one of the first guys to call me and tell me, you know, that was right today or that was wrong today. So, you know, and the biggest thing he taught me was that you can't pick and choose when you want to be a leader. You know, you have to do it every day. So, the early years in Boston, you know, some days I would come in and be great, some days I wouldn't. So, understanding that 21 years old, 22 years old, that, you know, you have to do it consistently. And that's one of the hardest things to do in life is to be consistent, let alone be a consistent leader at 23, 24 years old. So,
why do you think you struggled with consistency then? This is dynamite, by the way.
Pretty good?
Mm-hmm.
Struggled early, but I'm just still learning. You know, like I said, how many 22-year-old leaders can say they're leaders in this league, especially with three Hall of Famers on the team? So me trying to find my voice, or I'm going to say proving my worth, because obviously, you know, Kevin kind of vetoed the trade, but Kevin wanted me there in Boston that year in particular. So I understood the guys appreciated what I brought to the game, but still trying to find that voice, being the point guard on the floor, the extension of the coach with three Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. So I was very secure and understanding what I brought to the team, and just trying to, like I said, do what coach asked of me, along with me developing as, you know, a young player, trying to show my worth and what I brought to the team.
This is what I really don't understand. I mentioned this to you when we first talked about wanting to do something. But I look at the impact that you had, actually overall, the impact that you had overall, and the only time that I'm conscious of that there was a bump in the road or there was things really didn't work was in Dallas.
Dallas, right? 4 months, yeah.
And, you know, I know Rick really well, and I respect him. I respect him a lot, but I know that he can be challenging. And in fact, in some ways, I kind of see you guys as a little bit alike.
Very, what?
Very high basketball IQ.
Rick is Rick. Yo, I want to be Rick.
One of a kind.
Yeah.
But I think that he has a very clear view of what needs to happen in a certain situation. And I think you do too. I think if there was any, like, not having an opportunity, like hitting the ground running,
mm-hmm.
and having two guys who haven't had a chance to kind of sit down and talk about how they see the game and or they see a particular team and how it works, that's where I could see it would rub, because you're coming in instantly recognizing, okay, I think this is what we need to do or this is what I need to do.
Well, when I came in, I was actually trying to, like, just, as I always do, like, early, whatever team I go to, I'll just sit back and let things kind of unfold. You know, you say you want this person, this leader, this, you know, this point guard, that you don't have to, you know, run the offense and, you know, kind of just let it go, and I can take control, which you knew coming in, that's what I was capable of doing, and that's what I've done, and that's what I'm accustomed to.
Right.
So I try to come in, I tried to come in, and like I said, didn't say a word. Everyone kept trying to tell me to be like J-Kid, be like J-Kid. That's all I kept hearing was, do what J-Kid did. I'm just like, I'm not J-Kid, but I understand the mentality of what you all trying to get me to
do. What do they mean by that?
I mean, they said J-Kid pretty much trying to control a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like the pace and offensive flow. So I didn't, me coming in mid-season, that couldn't be my mindset because I need to sit back and understand what Rick wants from me as a point guard. You know, understand the personnel, Tyson getting used to Monte, Chandler Parsons needs the ball, Dirk, where he likes his spot. So that wasn't a challenge. It was just a matter of time to, you know, to figure it out. You know, I was coming in mid-season. Like I said, I broke down film. Expectations were high. I plan on winning a championship that year. Pretty much every team I go on, I feel like I can win a championship, maybe besides the Sacramento year. But every team I've been on going into the season or, you know, wherever I was at, I feel like that we would have had a possibility if we all believed and things worked out. Obviously, injury prone and a little bit of luck. Those teams I played for have probably had a small window of trying to, you know, see the big picture as far as I ring. So I never come in with the mindset like, you know, this is my shit or I'm running it, or it's like, let me see back. Because you all, first of all, you already, I feel like a lot of people are intimidated when I do come into a system or a situation, organization, because of what they've heard versus actually knowing me. So I get so many people like, oh, you know, like, I'm so surprised, or like, it's unreal how I really, I'm like, you judge me off of articles and what you perceive me from TV, how to portray me versus understanding who I really am and what my daily routine and how I work at it. So once people see that, it's like, oh, he's not that. When that's what you say, that's when the people on one side of the fence is like, oh, he's this, and the other side, it's the people that, you know, don't really know me or what they perceive me from the media.
I would think now at this point, though, that you've demonstrated that in enough places, especially with young guys.
Yeah.
You did it in Chicago, you did it in Sac, and you did it in L.A., right?
New Orleans?
I mean, the effect you've had, not just blowing the smoke, has been profound. Those teams were not, like, you elevated those teams. And it wasn't you elevated them by, you know, like forcing guys. Like, you brought them along. The way guys talk about you that played with you, this is the part that I really don't understand. Is like, you know, somebody said to me, well, it's your age is the reason that nobody's invested in you at this point. And I'm like,
guys are getting 4-year deals at 33. They, you know, they blame my age. Like, nah, I don't believe that's the case. It's not my age.
What do you think it is? Because I
think it's probably the, I would maybe say, I don't really understand it, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. But it's funny, like, coming into the exit meetings, and it's like, I've heard this before. It's like the same. It's like they all, I wouldn't say they all, because I haven't played for every team. But, you know, some guys seem like this, like a GM, like, exit pitch. That this is like the layout. This is the standard, you know, things you should say when you're exiting a meeting.
Right.
You compliment on this. Right. You don't really, you know, get to the nitty gritty, but, you know, we love you and good luck next year. Like, versus, like, you know, like, people tell me how important I am to certain teams and what I bring to the team, but it's like, okay, but you're not going to bring me back. So, like, it's okay to, you know, to be straightforward, honest. Like, I'm okay with it. Well, figuring out what I can do to be better, but it's really nothing much. It's kind of pretty much the same, like, it's been the same speech coming out of these exit meetings. And, you know, when July 1st comes, things change. But I don't have a clue what it could be. Like I said, the impact I thought I had in New Orleans. And I think what's undervalued now is the chemistry and keeping guys together, keeping teams together. People think you can just put a team together 1 year and expect success, or, you know, just make the playoffs with this 1 year roster we put together. But if you don't, and like I was saying, this is like, if the organization doesn't give a guy.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
A couple-year, multi-year deal, then it's how much can that guy really invest in?
You know, it's like a coach on a one-year deal.
Yeah, right. It's like what T. Lou turned out is, like, you don't really believe in me. Like, you're trying to just fill a void, or I'm just a plug-in. But as the value as a player and as the team chemistry builds, you can't really invest. I mean, you can say that, okay, you're playing for your contract or your one-year deal, but it's like, though, on the mediocre teams, okay, cool, but if you're on championship caliber teams and you want to get to that level, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, a lot of people get messed up when they thought, you know, you put the big three together and you won. It's like, that was the maturity level of those guys, the sacrifices they made.
It was a unique situation.
And there's not a lot of, I can't name four superstars or three superstars who's willing to do that and really be okay with the sacrifice and then understanding, like, I'm not all I can be unless he's all he can be,
right,
versus, oh, he's getting more attention than me, he's getting more shots.
Right.
It was none of that. And nowadays, you can't genuinely say that you can put a team together and then and have that type of organic feeling and want to, you know, win as a team collectively and do it day by day.
You had a lot of battles with LeBron when you were in Boston, right? What did you learn about him playing with him?
I mean, you hear it, but his work ethic. You know, the way he goes about it, how disciplined he is, his regimen, his routine. I mean, it's no coincidence he's been injury prone or injury free his whole career.
Yeah.
He invests in himself. I mean, obviously, as people know, he's non-confrontational. But, you know, he's consistent. But, man, he's a hell of a player.
How much was the chemistry at the end of the year? Well, let me start coming in. Playing with a guy that big, how was it for you trying to figure out where you fit or how you could lead?
It wasn't. I mean, like, I played with the most Hall of Famers in the last 10 years, like, as far as anybody in the league. I mean,
yeah.
From AD to Cuz to Kevin to Ray, I mean, you name it, Dirk, I play with anybody and everybody for the most part. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously none of them are LeBron, but I played with over 10 Hall of Famers. So I come in as, you know, as a professional and as a leader and as a guy that has a couple accolades and just try to go about it as professionally and understanding, like, I'm here to help you. You know, I'm here to make your job a lot easier, whether it's off the court or on the court. You know, I'm a guy you can lean on and depend on as far as a steady veteran in the locker room. And then as far as it's the bridge gap between, you know, himself and the younger players versus, you know, they don't have the bridge from him and the coaches. He does a direct line with those guys. But it just, you know, just trying to do what I can to help him, you know, be a sidekick. What I've done my whole career, take things off of the superstars. And what I pride myself on is making their job a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, getting them, you know, four more extra points that they wouldn't have to work for as far as even just running the floor or, you know, finding their certain spots they love the ball in and play calling, whatever, any way I can help, you know, the superstars or a guy like LeBron, is, you know, that's what you kind of come in and understand that's your role.
Mo said to me,
oh, Wagner?
Yeah. Is that your guy? Is that one of your guys?
Yeah. He texted me the other day.
He talked about how you were able to bridge the gap. Again, it's just kind of your influence on the young guys in particular. He was a reflection of that. Has always been so powerful. What is it? Why do you think guys gravitate towards you? Or
probably because they used to watch me when they were about 8 or 9 years old. my son's age. They, I was their favorite player at the son's age. So coming in and me not being an asshole to them, I think it probably helps. But no, just the genuineness. You know, I think the authentication as far as, you know, me daily coming in, working out, to see how the work I put in. I do it by example. I'm pretty much the first and last to leave type of thing, and willing to help break down film. I talk to a lot of young guys as far as developing it, and I always let those guys know, like, anything I can help, you know, you just call me, whether it's, because I think I've been there. So if you're a rookie and you're tired of eating McDonald's or you're tired of eating out all the time, I have a chef. I always invite guys to come to the house and eat whenever they want. Rides to the airport. I mean, anything you name it as far as getting around the facility, on the road, suggestions, food, try to take them shopping every once in a while, get them clothes. So kind of what people did for me, like what KG did for me, you know, what my veterans, Keon Doolin, PJ Brown, those guys just, you know, instilled in me, is just, I try to give it back. You know, I think that's what the league is missing, is great vets that are willing to show the young guys the ropes and how to become professionals and how to navigate through life. And what was big for me is KG wasn't a big brother on the court. He was also one off the court. So, you know, like I said, transitioning in life from college to making millions of dollars to living on your own, it's a big change. So me, 13 years in, it's like, anything you need, I could probably try to steer you in the right direction. If I don't know it, I'll figure it out, but I've been around a little bit, and I kind of know, you know, what to do, what not to do, and I let it come organic. I don't try to force myself on the certain players. I think the chemistry on the plane, you know, the road trips, people just kind of see, you know, I guess the genuineness. You know, I always pick up tabs whenever I go places, you know, unless I'm with LeBron.
Unless you're with LeBron.
Or, you know, like I think,
then you're like,
I mean, I'll try to sneak a couple bills from him as well this year, but
he usually he's quick that way, or you're just like,
no, he'll grab it quickly. So I beat him a couple times getting the check, that's what KG did. You know, KG never let me pay for a bill growing up. I mean, well, not growing up, but when I first came in the league. And Doc, whenever you met Doc at a restaurant, he would pay for the meal if you were out at the same restaurant as him. So it's kind of like that's been instilled in me, and it's kind of like, it's just what it is. Like,
right where it's like,
was it? I've often said this about LeBron, and that he's almost trapped by his stardom and the expectation.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you see that too, whether it's with the team or whether it was the whole thing about Rich Paul being on the team and clutch, and or being on the team playing,
right.
Being around and influencing things. Do you see that? Did you feel that this year? Did you sense that?
I mean, I did, but like I said, coming into it, that's what comes to it. I mean, it comes with it.
You were expecting it was going to be that way.
I was. I had no idea, because I've called people, you know, talked to people who played with LeBron, you know, but you don't know until you go into it, you know, yourself. So to me, like I said, me being 14, 13 years in, I don't think it affected me, or I didn't look at it as maybe Kuz did, or, you know, how Lonzo viewed it, obviously, because they've never, y'all knew them. So for me, Mr. Basketball it comes with it. You know, no surprise. He's a great teammate. You know, he's very thoughtful. He's a gift giver. You know, he wants to, you know, host and have people have a good time. Kind of like myself. Like, that's why I pride myself on. We love dinners. You know, we always kind of went to dinner and just, you know, had a drink of wine, glass of wine, and just kind of chopped it up. It was life, basketball, trying to teach the young guys, you know, a couple things to take note from what we've experienced. So, I don't know, you know, people probably don't say much about his leadership or him being a great teammate, but I would definitely consider him a really good teammate.
Do you think that the all the trade rumors really fucked up the young guys as much as people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even some of the old guys.
Really?
Yeah.
What, I mean, like Lance?
I mean, I can't say name, but
okay,
he did. I mean, I remember we were I was on the bench. Me and the guy were on the bench. The Atlanta game right before the break.
Okay.
And obviously all this happened. And the guy was like cussing. He was cussing he was talking bad about the situation like during the game. I'm just like snap out of it. Like, that shit's over with, or, you know, we'll go through it. But he was a vet. Like, we have to continue to move forward and, you know, not focus on what the young guys may be focusing on, because we have to lead back down. So that was kind of crazy to see the vet like kind of distraught from that. And me, I'm going to say I'm kind of numb to it. Like, I was in trade rumors every year in Boston. 8 straight years. So it's like you have to go through it, and it's, you can't really kind of relate it to you go through yourself. You know, being a young player, being feeling like you want it or not want it from an organization, you know, not knowing the future, waking up every day, and nowadays you're on the phone every day reading stuff. When I was going through a lot of it, it wasn't so much social media, it was just TV. Trades on TV or trade.
You probably turned that off.
Yeah, I never really watched it. So it was kind of, you would hear it, and you know, people would text you and say something about it, but like not so much in your face. 8 different blockbuster trades or proposal trades, your names and every one of them, every Instagram scroll you put, you're in it. So psychologically, that probably took a toll on a lot of young guys.
Yeah.
And like myself, a lot of them probably wouldn't tell you that. You know, a lot of them probably would stay to a shell and say it didn't affect me. But overall, as far as the team dynamics, it definitely did.
How did you try to use your experience or try to keep it from impacting them? I mean, can you do anything?
It's only so much you could say versus, like I said, daily waking up to it. And it was, obviously, we were in the news for a while as far as, you know, those names and the trades, who was going to be there, who wasn't. So guys may feel like, oh, I need to prove myself so I won't be traded. Or guys like, you know what, they're going to trade me anyway. So it's like each game you didn't know what the mentality was for those guys individually coming out, you know, willing to, you know, giving their all to play. Like, should I give my all to this organization who's about to trade me in 2 days? But my teammate doesn't want me. You know, it's all type of questions circling and looping. And it just wasn't, I don't think it was handled the right way.
Would you play here again? How did your exit?
Oh man, I thought I would get a 4-year deal after the exit. It went well. I mean, obviously the next day my coach left. I mean, so it's like, how much? Magic left the first day.
And what did you think of that? When you saw that, what did you think?
It was crazy because I was actually pulling into the ramp, the tunnel, and Rob was putting his jacket on, and he kind of gave me a look like he didn't know what was going on. And I kind of asked him, I was like, "You talking to me?" He's like, "Yeah." I talked to him. I kept walking, and that's when all the media was in the hallway, and I saw it. And we kind of walked in, we talked about it a little bit as players and team, but we kind of tried to, I had to focus a little bit on
sure.
Going, but it was so much of a distraction that day, you couldn't really focus. And, but like I said, it was just eye-opening, like, oh, okay, this is not normal, but this is what it is, this is what we're dealing with.
Was this the craziest, of all the places you play, was this the craziest?
Craziest? Obviously had the most media attention.
Yeah.
Craziest?
I mean, just in terms of, I don't know, like some of the things that were in the Baxter Holmes piece, I'm like, okay, you dramatized it a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of shit that goes on, right? It's just part of the business, and it's part of every business. But then there's other things where you go, God, who, and I have this feeling right now, and I know Jeannie, I've known Rob, I know everybody, and I'm like, okay, who's really running the ship here? Like, right?
Don't know, yeah.
And so, to work in that environment, like, I've been in one or two places where you wonder, okay, who's really making the decisions here? Or
the staff, like, daily, being there daily, like, from the trainer staff to, you know, I guess the guys in the weight room to the nutrition and shit, like, everybody, we were all kind of, I wouldn't say we were super tight, but we were pretty close. You know, we all spoke, we got along, we were together daily, that's what it had to be. You know, we traveled together, all the PR staff, and everyone was great. So we understood what the storm we were kind of in, but at the same time, like, when we were there, we were kind of just there. Like, we were focused on what we had to do, trying to the next game, guys getting injured, hurt. So it was really genuine during all the storm, and not knowing, you know, who, you know, if you want to be there during the trade time or not. But we kind of, I think we held together as best as possible. Don't want to keep making excuses, but obviously injuries play a big part.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
So we'd be sitting here, maybe a different story would be written today if, you know, LeBron didn't go down, you know, that time. But things happen for a reason. You know, obviously the Zubac trade that during the deadline of, I guess, just having to pull the trigger, that took a toll on a couple of people. You know, with Beasley went through JaVale, pneumonia, like it was a lot of things that people were in and out.
Yeah.
We couldn't try to get the chemistry to develop as quick as possible when you have a lot of one-year guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the biggest difference from seeing, like, when I was in Boston, when they brought the team together 1 year, how much, like I said, KG was 30, I was 21. You know, it wasn't like we were, you know, we would go home and do the same things. You know, so the chemistry we developed, you know, as far as taking the trip to Rome, that helped. You know, like I said, all the dinners we used to take when we were on the road, it just happened naturally, and that's the time we invested. You know, we didn't have any injuries that year, so all those little things was a factor, and I think why we were successful in understanding one another, being around each other more. But the time we were apart, you know, LeBron misses, you know, 20 every games. He's not traveling. I don't travel. JaVale's sick. He doesn't travel. Like, those times away, or you're not with the team daily in a one-year deal, those play a part. You know, you can't really come together as quickly as you want.
See, but that's what I wondered, too, is when they brought those guys together in Boston, when they built that team, you guys all knew what it was about. You were playing for a championship. Coming into this year, it was all about...
I was playing for a championship. Coming in
this year.
I mean, you have a guy on your team that went to the finals 9 straight times. So me, it was crazy because sitting watching back when he was in Cleveland, Golden State, I was at home watching the finals with my kids, and I was like, if I get LeBron on my team, if I don't win, I fail. Because he's been in the finals 9 straight times. So for me as a coach, player, I have to figure out how to beat Golden State. I was trying to figure out how to beat, get over the hump with Golden State. So I'm kind of, I'm strategically thinking before the season started, okay, I can match, you know, him up with Cuz. I can throw two people at Cuz. I'll put LeBron on, you know, such and such. So I was already planning on how to beat the Golden State Warriors. Then, you know, things happen. In regards to my roster, LeBron James on your team, for me, my expectation was the finals.
Yeah.
9 straight times, I don't want to be the guy that doesn't be able to get it there. Yeah. But like I said, injuries are different, and I felt like no one could beat us 4 times before we beat them 4 times coming into the season. Miss LeBron James, you can't not say you're not going to compete for a championship with him on your team.
So when you guys beat the snot out of them on Christmas Day, I know it's only one game, but you have to feel like you envisioned was a possibility.
Absolutely. And at that time, like the energy, the synergy around the team was, you know, obviously winning helps, but like that was a big momentum game for us. Even the Boston game was a big momentum game for us, but obviously the trade happened and switched the starting lineup the very next game. So it was kind of obviously rocky, but that was the Christmas game was a big game, but we all kind of was like, you know, shit, what about LeBron? Like, that was when it went down. So we go back in the locker room, and as far as everybody else stepping up, that was big. And I think those situations are needed at times because LeBron can't win by himself. And you need team chemistry, you need guys to step up in big times. And that was it wasn't the playoffs, but it was, you know, the biggest game of some guys' career. Christmas game, one is the defending champs, and guys stepped up. So that gave me hope as far as, okay, I can trust this guy, you know, in the fourth quarter, I can depend on him, or showing LeBron, this is another guy you can trust, or this is a guy you may love to be in the pick and roll with, because, you know, how he played against the champs, and their defensive schemes are unreal versus every team, you got the other team you play.
All right, that does it for part one of my conversation with Rajon Rondo. We'll bring you part two next week on the usual Wednesday Bucher and Friends day. Hope you enjoyed it. By the way, if you're enjoying the podcast overall, please rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And then if you'll let us do something for you, screenshot the review and send it to @BucherFriends, and you'll be eligible to win some prizes. All right, that does it for this episode. Next episode, I will be joined by Ryan Hollins. Actually, one of two things, since we're in between games here with the NBA Finals. If it's possible to bring you part two of Rondo in our next podcast, we will do that. Not sure if I could pull that off with my TV and other duties, but if we can do it, we will. Otherwise, it'll be Ryan Hollins and I breaking down everything when it comes to Kevin Durant, his future, his decision to play. Whenever we get to that, that's going to be a fiery conversation, no doubt. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.